The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening, everyone. I would like to continue on my series on emotions, but I'd like to do it a little differently today, and not so much address an emotion, but address a practice that is really helpful in the field of clearing emotions, working with emotions, and all that. And I'll start then in introducing it, telling you a story about a monk who was a very diligent monk in the monastery. He practiced meditation quite diligently, quite hard, long hours. He dedicated himself to do the monastic work that he was assigned with reverence and care and sensitivity. He was always caring for the other monks when he could. And he was also very dedicated sincerely to really delving into the sacred scriptures of Buddhism and really trying to understand what the Buddha had to teach. And he was in the monastery for many years, but he made no spiritual progress whatsoever. So what was it? And the reason he made no progress whatsoever was he did not know how to forgive. Without being able to forgive, many people will be stuck in their lives. And the capacity to forgive is a very, very important ability. And it's not an ability that's necessarily so important for the people that you forgive, though it might be very meaningful for them, but it's really important for you. If you are holding anger, holding resentment, if your heart is closed. Forgiveness is held up as a beautiful ideal in many religions. And as an ideal, I think of it kind of similar to compassion. They have kind of, they're siblings in the practice, those two, compassion and forgiveness. And both of them are held up as high ideals. But what's often overlooked in holding these up as beautiful ideals is that both of them arise out of the messiness, the difficulties, the failures and the hurts of life. Compassion arises in contact with suffering, the ways that people hurt, harm each other, fail each other, all those things. And the compassion is needed because of that. And if it's just, you know, kind of a romantic hallmark idea of compassion, it's all about being sweet and nice and everything. It misses perhaps the idea that compassion is really actually a difficult way of meeting the world, because it meets the difficulty of the world, the suffering of the world, and learning how to meet it in a healthy and productive, useful way. So the same thing with forgiveness. Forgiveness is an ideal, a beautiful ideal, but it arises only because we hurt each other, we suffer, we fail. And there's so much of this in human life, so much hurt, harm, failure, disappointments, that go on, that it's important to consider that maybe what it means to be a human being is, in a big part, is to be a human failing. That part of being human is not, it's not a personal failing that we fail when we do these things. It comes with being human. And so kind of being a little bit, holding a little bit more generously, graciously, and then meeting it with our compassion and meeting it with our capacity or our interest, our intention to forgive. When we need to forgive for our sake, someone can come to you and ask for forgiveness, and maybe you don't have no resentment at all, and it's easy to forgive. But when we forgive for our own sake, it's because there's some place of the heart is closed. I remember once someone had hurt me, done something not so nice, and after some period of time, I thought I had forgiven her. And it took me a while to realize that I hadn't. What had happened was that I had become neutral towards her. But neutral is not forgiveness. Forgiveness, I think, when it's done fully, allows our goodwill, our warmth, our loving kindness, to be open towards that person again. There's a warmth to that person, or at least a kind of a feeling of goodwill to that person that's there. And so it took me a while to realize that I hadn't forgiven her yet. I was still, the neutral feeling wasn't actually the full movement of forgiveness. And I like that the word forgive has the word given it. So it's, you know, what does it take to come to a place where we're now willing to have some generosity of heart to the person who we've been holding our heart closed to before? It's been said sometimes that forgiveness is primarily for the sake of the forgiver. Though if you're in the receiving end of someone's forgiveness, it can feel very helpful to receive that. It's pointed out that forgiveness is not the same thing as excusing someone for what they've done. Oh, it's okay, you know, I understand why you did it, and, you know, it was no big deal, and, you know, well, if you did it for that reason, then, okay, well, it wasn't really so bad after all, or whatever. Forgiveness is not excusing someone. If someone has caused harm and transgressed, it's really important to keep that in mind, not forget that. It's not forgetting. And forgiveness is also not pardoning in the sense of letting someone off the hook. Sometimes people have to continue living out the consequences of their deeds, of what they've done. It's possible to forgive someone and still call the police. It's possible to forgive someone and still expect them to make amends for what they've done. So it's not pardoning in the sense of they're off the hook then. But forgiveness, I think primarily is you know, this willingness to open the heart to them and feel goodwill to them, to not exclude them from our love or from our openness or from our hearts. I received this. My mother-in-law sent me this some years ago. It's an article from the Boston Globe some years ago. And the title of the article is "Hate is a Useless Emotion." Isn't that nice? Darrell Williams was 15 years old, a sophomore playing varsity football for Jamaica Plain High School. People said he had a bright athletic future ahead of him, including college scholarships. But on the night of September 28, 1979, Williams was just focusing on the next play. Williams and his coach were standing in the end zone, the coach congratulating Williams on catching a bomb, a deep pass that had put his team on the 5-yard line, which led to a touchdown, which put them ahead of the home team, Charlestown High. 1 minute, Williams was elated. The next, he was on his back, wondering why his teammates were fleeing. He tried to get up and run with them, but he couldn't. "I thought someone had hit me good in the game," he recalled in a recent interview. "I wanted to meet that person and tell them it was a good hit." The hit, however, was a bullet, fired by a white Charleston teenager from the roof of a nearby building. Police called it a racially motivated shooting. Tensions over busing were still simmering. Williams, who was black, was hit in the neck and left a quadriplegic. In an instant, the violent act of a stranger ended his dreams of athletic stardom. For the rest of his life, Williams would have to depend on someone else for even the most basic physical tasks, from eating a meal to turning pages in a book. Undeterred, Williams finished high school, got a degree, and went to work as an outreach specialist. Perhaps even more remarkable is that Williams has forgiven his assailants, two of whom were convicted, served 10 years in prison, and have been released. Anger did well up at first, he says. The situation would have been a lot easier to take had it occurred during the game in an actual football injury instead of a pure act of hatred. Even though his assailants never apologized and he never saw them, Williams chose to forgive. Although they put me in an uninviable position, I never hated because I will not give anyone that control over me. Hate is a useless emotion that takes up too much energy, says Williams, now 39. If I were to retaliate in anger, what would make me different from them? Forgiveness, he believes, has helped him heal. And, you know, I've read, you know, many stories, especially in newspapers, of dramatic movements of forgiveness of people who have had been the victims or something of tremendous atrocities. It's almost superhuman. It's almost like these stories are, you know, more than we can imagine. These are mythic people, mythic almost, that people should do this. But there are people. And I would imagine that some of you would rise to the occasion if some of these things happened to you, but it's unimaginable now. And perhaps you would rise to the occasion because the alternative is too painful. It's too painful to go through life hating. It's too painful to go through life angry, bitter, closed down. And that it takes too much energy, as he says. And that somehow to find some way to release the holding. And in pursuing or thinking about forgiveness, I think it's very important to realize that there's a very important distinction between relief and release. And many people pursue relief. They want relief for their pain, their suffering. And not a few family of victims have sought for relief in having a murderer executed and felt some degree of relief watching in a death row, watching someone be executed by the state, feel the relief, but never feel the release. Never be freed from the anger, the bitterness, and the hurt that they carry with them. And it's very hard to release it because it can feel so justified. It can feel so much like the call for fairness and justice demands it. How can we, you know, if I forgive someone, I'm letting them off the hook, or, you know, it's the cosmic justice is not happening then. There has to be something that, you know, I have to hold on to my anger and bitterness so that justice can somehow be meted out. But we don't forgive, I think, for the other person's sake. Or you can, certainly. But I think the primary reason to forgive is really, I think, sometimes for your own sake. That's what I think. Maybe some of you think differently. Sometimes, perhaps, the motivation to forgive is really because we see how beneficial it's going to be for the other person, how meaningful it is for the other person. I've heard people say that the best way they could get back to their enemy was to forgive them. That was really the one thing that would, you know, rub it in somehow. That's not good, that approach. There's this remarkable story that now I've heard a number of times, I hope it's true, these wonderful stories, of a mother whose son, a teenage son, was killed by a young gang member. He was proving his way into the gang. And she showed up at the trial of the murderer. And after the young man was convicted, she stood up in court and looked the murderer in the eye and said to him, "I'm going to kill you." 6 months after the young man began his prison sentence, she went to visit him. And he had no family who visited him. No one visited him. He was living on the streets. And so at the end of that visit, she gave him some dollars to buy something, you know, cigarettes or something in the prison. And then she started to visit him. And kind of helped him a little bit in the prison. Was probably the only person who visited him. And after many years, or some years, it was time for him to be released. And she said to him, "You know, do you have anything to do when you go?" He said, "No." "Well, I'll find you a job." And then when it got even closer to being released, he said, "Do you have anywhere to go?" And he said, "No." "Well, I have an empty room in my house. Stay temporarily with me." And he did for a while. And then after some time, she called him into the dining room table. And she said to him, "Remember at your trial, I said I was going to kill you?" And he said, "Yep, I can never forget that." And she said, "I did. That boy who killed my son is gone." And I have no son now. And will you be my son? And she adopted him. That's quite remarkable. I hope it's a true story. I was surprised in myself at one point to discover that in the undercurrents of my life, as I lived my life and not paying any attention to certain, you know, maybe didn't think about some things for a decade or 15 years or something, at one point I was surprised that my resentment towards someone was still there. It hadn't gone away. But I hadn't thought about her for 15 years, and wow, now that I think about her, how good she is. And it took me almost 20 years to be released. What it took actually for me was meeting her again. I hadn't seen her for 20 years or something. And somehow in the meeting with her again, we didn't talk about it, what had happened, but somehow in that meeting, there was some clarity for me, and I was able to let something go, and no longer she was no I no longer carried her on my back. She was rid of her. So forgiveness is not easy to do, and because it's an ideal, some people measure themselves up against some high standard of forgiving. I'm supposed to forgive just like that, and I'm supposed to do it completely and well, and supposed to be going down the street smiling to everyone, especially that no good lousy. And I don't think it happens quickly. Sometimes it may. And I don't think it's easy. But it begins not by being able to do it, but it begins by wanting to. And this desire, the intention to want to begin doing the work for forgiveness is really a big turn. And then it takes its time. Sometimes it takes a long time. Sometimes it's the heart, the inner life, the mind, the heart has to kind of digest what happened and sort through a lot of different things in order to kind of come to it. But simply that you set the course direction towards forgiveness makes a big difference. It helps also a lot if you're no longer being victimized. If it's ongoing, the way harm is being done, it probably doesn't make sense to forgive. But then maybe something else is needed, like, you know, tell them to stop or something. It also helps a lot if we kind of look at our issues of our self-identity. How do we see ourselves as a person? How do we identify ourselves or represent ourselves to ourselves in relationship to the pain and the suffering and all that? Because if we see ourselves, some people see themselves as a victim, as primarily as a victim, and that identity is something they hold on to for support, for comfort, for recognition of other people. And it's very hard sometimes to let go of it because of the what we think is the benefits that come with that kind of identity. Also connected to this idea of identity is kind of like the issue of how much personal strength we have. It's a lot easier to forgive if we have some inner strength or confidence or feel our own dignity or feel our own worth. In the analogy I like to give, maybe I gave it here recently, if a fly falls on an sits flies down and settles on an ant, it's a big deal for the ant. If the same fly flies away and lands on an elephant, it's not a big deal. So as you go through your life, do you go through the life as an ant or like an elephant? And the suggestion in the Dharma is that you can be an elephant. And the suggestion in the Dharma is that you don't have to take all the circumstances of your life and what details of what happens and the ups and downs of your life as such a heavy burden as if it's a heavy fly and a little ant. Not to diminish the difficulties that happen in life, but how big we feel, how much confidence we feel is really important. So perhaps we don't doesn't make sense to offer forgiveness until we do some inner work on ourselves in order to grow up and become stronger and be able to stand on our own two feet. Also then the forgiveness I think has more power. Because the person we're forgiving can see, wow, there's a real person there who's forgiving. As opposed to someone who cowers in the corner and says, oh, I think, I'll forgive you. It's a lot different. That's one thing to say, I forgive you. With it, upright, standing on your own two feet, looking them in the face. That carries a lot more meaning than just kind of cower, doing it very meekly. And I would say that forgiveness is not for the meek. And sometimes one of the reasons, sometimes forgiveness gets a bad rap because it's associated sometimes with meekness. And I don't think that's, meek forgiveness maybe is no forgiveness at all. Hopefully it comes from our strength or taking our places and being here. Another thing that can help with forgiveness is understanding the other person so that there can be some compassion or some understanding, not to excuse them. But many people have found it easier to forgive when we understand that the person who's harmed us, that person suffers too. And perhaps it's out of their suffering that they acted the way they've done. So what does it take to forgive? And maybe more importantly, what does it take to think that forgiveness is useful, is important? So the monk, who was diligent in the monastery, made no progress because he hadn't learned to forgive. There might come a time, for some of you, where something like meditation practice, you'll reach an impasse in meditation. And no matter how diligent you try to practice and get concentrated and be mindful and stay present, the real issue might be how you're holding resentment, anger, hurt, how you're holding the heart closed. And that maybe what's needed is not some meditative technology of focusing on the breath, entering into bliss. Maybe what's rather needed is to this very human, messy process of forgiving. The forgiveness can go in many directions. We can forgive someone else. Sometimes what's needed is not forgiving someone else, but sometimes what you need is to ask someone else to forgive you. sometimes the way that our heart is closed, or maybe the better expression is weighed down, is not by what's been done to us, but what we've done to others. And in order for the spiritual progress to continue, for the heart to keep working, it has to somehow be freed of how it's weighed down by its regrets, its guilt, its shame, its sense of kind of, yeah, those things. And so what's needed is we have to go to someone and say, will you forgive me? I confess and I repent. In most religions, Buddhism included, there are these three very important steps in interpersonal difficulties. There's confession, repentance, and forgiveness. And confession is a really important part. So if you need to be forgiven, confession is part of it. Repentance, for me, means making amends. Sometimes it's not enough just to say you're sorry. Sometimes you actually have to do something about it. The dramatic example for this is one from the movie Gandhi, you know, where in the movie, I think it's a Muslim man comes to Gandhi distraught because he's killed some Hindus. And he wants to know what to do. He just feels terrible at what he's done. And Gandhi turns to him and says he has to adopt a Hindu child and raise him as a Hindu. And in the movie, I think if I remember in the movie, the guy's face just kind of goes in shock. But that's you know, he makes to me make amends. He needs to somehow do something in order to free his own heart. And he can't just do it overnight. It would take, you know, all those years of raising someone. So sometimes we have to forgive someone else. Or we have to ask for forgiveness. And perhaps then it's not a matter of the kind of a different kind of strength, or maybe similar kind of strength. Maybe it's a real strength of character to be able to go to someone and apologize. I'm sorry. Again, it's not an act of meek act. And perhaps if we come to someone meekly and weakly, maybe the apology doesn't count as much as if we come really chastened, but strong and really clear, you know, this is really important for me, and I apologize. And then the third step of forgiveness is that of forgiving ourselves. And for some people, that's really a crucial step. Some people hold a lot of anger towards themselves and feel a lot of shame for themselves, what they've done in the past, their shortcomings, and somehow, you know, no one else really, the forgiveness from someone else doesn't really help, doesn't really support or free the heart. And so there's actually a movement of turning towards oneself and opening the heart again towards ourselves, be forgiving for what we've done, all that. So, elephants. I wonder, if you need to forgive someone, who would it be? If you were to leave tonight or thinking, oh yeah, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, today, who do you need to forgive? And I ask you also to reflect, is there anyone for whom it would be helpful for you, meaningful for you, supportive of you, for you, if you could forgive them? Is there anyone out there? Maybe for their sake, but also for your sake. Anybody that you need to forgive, to offer your forgiveness? And then finally, are there ways, are there things that you could forgive yourself for in this long life that you've had so far? It's unimaginable to me that you would not have made mistakes. I think you're all humans. Of course you've made mistakes. Do you hold those mistakes against yourself? And if so, could you forgive yourself? Could you release yourself from the way that you hold yourself down? I like it that the word forgiveness has the word give in it. Its forgiveness is a subspecies of generosity. Can you be generous? The world needs people who are generous, and the world needs forgiveness. And then, perhaps, we can consider that I gave last week's and this week's talk in reverse order. Maybe I should have done gratitude after forgiveness. And I hope that as you leave tonight, that you can leave grateful that our human heart has the capacity to forgive. Every human heart has the capacity. And when the need is great, when the need is there, it can be done. And then you'll be able to go back to that monastery and tell that monk what he overlooked. Thank you all.